I've had a question from some of the students at the McRobertson Girls High School about Tom Cruise. He does, of course, does the narration on this new movie. What was it like to work with him?
I can tell you that working with Tom Cruise was an absolute privilege and a delight and lots of fun. As you have been no doubt reading and hearing, he is a great space enthusiast, but he's also an accomplished pilot himself. He's a jet pilot. He's a deep sea diver. He's an explorer, and we took him prior to our recording. We took him on a tour of the Johnson Space Center, and he flew all the simulators. The astronauts told me afterwards that he had more questions than they knew how to answer. He is very serious about space. He's not a dilettante. He's really, really interested. And as such, that made him a fantastic narrator for the film and a really good fit, because I think when you hear him, you'll see that he kind of stands in for all of us who can't go into space. So he is radiating his own personal enthusiasm in his performance in the film, and it's very infectious. And I feel just so glad and happy that we were able to work together. It was really a great thing.
You've mentioned a few things that are in this new movie, Space Station 3D. What are some of the other things we can expect to see?
Well, as I mentioned, we have two cameras, one that lived inside the space shuttle, inside the space station for 337 days. And what that camera lets us do is fly through the station and explore its architecture alongside the crews that live there. It lets us shave and take a shower and pack and unpack, equip a lab, see views out the window, all manner of fun things inside the space station. It acquaints us with the early science that is being done there, the human resource facility coming into the lab, and some of the other experiments that were being installed at that time. The cargo bay camera, which flies up and down in the shuttle's cargo bay, that camera is positioned in different places in the cargo bay depending on what we're shooting. And what that shows you is the exterior construction with spacewalkers. We have three different lenses, so you feel that you're right there on the on the edge of the structure as they're deploying antennas and hooking up the fluid cables. And what it really gives you, though, is an insight into how complex an engineering feat it really is. The detail is absolutely stunning when you see it. It's so hard to describe to people who haven't seen it, and people who have come away utterly in awe. And I think that you'll also find that you have lots of fun on the space station. There are lots of musical sequences, many faces coming and going, because the way that a space station is built is many rotating crews and many shuttle crews that come to visit. So it's a constant flux of different people. A very important aspect of it is the quilt of different nationalities that are participating. It's not called the International Space Station for nothing. It's of course a collaboration of 16 different nations, which is an enormous achievement in itself. And we have we feature astronauts from Canada, from Russia, from Italy, from Spain, from America, from Japan. They're all in there, and you hear them on the soundtrack talking about what it means to them to have finally come together in space, and it's a very inspiring thing.
Well, Canada itself has, of course, got a very big part in the space program. They built their Canada arm, and now the Canada Arm 2, which is on the space station. Have you had any work with the Canadian Space Agency?
Well, yes, we certainly have Marc Garneau, who we flew with, is now, of course, president of the Canadian Space Agency. We covered the installation of the SSRMS, that's the station's robotic arm, which is a heavier sister or brother to the original robotic arm that flies up and down on the shuttle. And so that is featured in the film. It, of course, was first used to install the station's airlock, which enables the EVA crews to actually do their spacewalks from the station rather than having to go out through the, when the shuttle is docked, through the shuttle's airlock. So.
And how did you, a Canadian, get involved in filming the American space program?
Well, I became involved because we, as IMAX, is a Canadian company. No, let me do that again, if I may. IMAX was originally a Canadian company, and that is how I came to work with Graham Ferguson and Bill Shaw and Roman Kreuter and the original founders of it. We made a film in 1981. This was before any space cameras were built, called Hail Columbia. And we definitely wanted, we thought space would be a wonderful subject matter for IMAX, and we wanted to convince NASA that we could fly a camera in space. And so Graham made Hail Columbia. NASA didn't know who the heck IMAX was, would barely give us press accreditation to film launches. It was quite a battle then to even get close to a shuttle launch, and let alone go into space, which we weren't trying to do at that time. I'll backtrack a little bit and tell you an interesting story, is that when we very early days put a theater into the National Air and Space Museum in Washington, that was in 1976, I believe, and the first director of the National Air and Space Museum was Michael Collins, Apollo 11 astronaut. And, of course, he was the person who was piloting the command module in orbit around while Aldrin and Armstrong took those first steps. And when Michael Collins saw the IMAX technology, he said, this is the camera that has to fly in space, because it's the only thing I have ever seen that begins to convey what we actually experience. Well, we heard that loud and clear, but we didn't know if anybody else had. And it actually took 10 years from the time he made that statement until we actually got a camera into space for Dream is Alive, and that was the...
And before joining IMAX, I believe you worked with the BBC in London.
Well, I've traveled all over the place. After first working with Graham Ferguson, the co-founder of IMAX in Expo 67, I migrated over to England, and during that time the invention of IMAX was proceeding and all the testing, and I got working there, working for the BBC, working on various rock and roll films. It was the 60s. I did a lot of work for Apple and John and Yoko, many films with them. And in the middle of all that, Graham was doing the first film for, first all IMAX film for Ontario Place, and happily invited me back to edit that. So I came back to Canada to do that, and went back to England. So I did a lot of IMAX, early IMAX films, interspersed with the rest of my work, which was in England. My husband was there, and my family was born there. So,
what were the Beatles like to work with?
Well, primarily, as I said, I worked with Yoko and John, and they were highly experimental filmmakers in their own right. And Yoko, of course, is a had been a conceptual artist and still is from the very early 60s. And so it was a real pleasure to work with them, because there were a lot of new ideas. And the little company that my husband and some partners and I had back then, we were the pioneers of rock videos. They weren't videos then. We were doing Top of the Pops, which was a BBC hit parade program, and we were the first to make little films to go with the records. And we became the company that people came to then. And so we did all kinds of rock and roll concerts and everything, and that led people started coming to us, and among them John and Yoko. So I edited a number of films for them, and just to close that loop, March 31st, I had a reunion after 32 years with Yoko, because she was having a retrospective of all her artwork at the Art Gallery of Toronto. And she was coming to Toronto, and I hooked up with her, and we were able to say hello after all that time. So it was fun.
And did that work in the pop field help you with the film that you made with the Rolling Stones?
Absolutely. Going back to, that was cut to 1991. I think that was when that film was made. And yes, that was just like stepping into a comfortable pair of slippers working on that film. And that was very similar to the way we used to actually shoot concert films, except with not as much film as you would in 16 millimeter because of the the expensive resources. But we had multiple cameras. We had 8 cameras, and it was a very similar kind of way of piecing it together. My job on that was to kind of supervise the editing. And that was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it.
And what was the film you had the most fun with? And perhaps, alternatively, what film has given you the most satisfaction?
Well, this is a very good question. I think I've done a lot of different kinds of films over many, many years. Some dramas, some documentaries. They're all completely different. I have to say that Space Station 3D is really the pinnacle for me in terms of what we started off planning, what our expectations were, and how it's actually come out. I think meeting and having the opportunity to train 9 different crews full of absolutely extraordinary people. All of the space shuttle crews we've trained for all of our films have been wonderful. There hasn't been one that that isn't. But somehow it was the mixture of people, the different nationalities of people, and what that brings to the mix is really inspiring. And it gives you hope for the future of the planet because, it's one small thing. But if there's more thinking, cooperative thinking like that, it will do us all a world of good.
It's only early days in the construction of the space station, and it's going to get a lot bigger and a lot more complex. Is there any chance that you'll update the film at some point?
Do you know, it's a very good question you ask. We've often been asked about updating films. Our film Destiny in Space, for instance, charted the initial deploy of the Hubble Space Telescope and then its subsequent repair, and I've often thought, well, gee, we ought to update it because at the time we released the movie, we were just getting the very first images back from the improved Hubble, which was, I think, in the Horsehead Nebula, maybe one of those. It was the first kind of proof that there were planets around other stars. And, an updated film just doesn't pull people in. You kind of really, you can't tack sort of a chapter on the end of an old film. It's somehow recycling it and isn't fair to the audience and isn't fair to the film. So I think it's better to think harder, work a bit harder, and try to invent a new idea to convey new information. Blue Planet is the same. I mean, if you think of most of the themes in that, most of the predictions and discussions are ongoing and will be for many, many years to come in terms of global warming and all of the things that are happening to the planet. But I think that we generations change so rapidly, I think you have to have a new and fresh approach on the same subject every time you step up to do something.
You shoot a lot more film in space than you actually get to use in the movies. And perhaps not everything goes according to plan. Is there any chance, like they do with some other movies, a sort of a bloopers film or DVD?
As I think I said earlier, there's no take two. on orbit. So one thing I didn't actually say, and this is a serious answer, I didn't explain that when we redesigned the cameras for space, we couldn't fly a two-strip camera. We had to fly a one-strip camera. Normally our ground cameras are a left eye and a right eye. Two strips of film, which is what makes them so large. They're projected with two strips of film. In order to fit in the mid-deck locker of the shuttle, we had to compress the camera into a one-strip system. That goes twice as fast and gives you half the yield. And so the film is going through there at 11 feet a second, more than 11 feet a second. And a roll the size of a family pizza, 1,220 feet, is gone in 108 seconds. So that gives you about three shots before they have to keep changing. So those crews did not mess around. They did not waste any film at all. So when I say there's no bloopers, there aren't really bloopers, but every little thing that was interesting to look at made its way into the film in some way or another. And I'll tell you an interesting story in that I had just finished supporting a mission. That means we're in mission control throughout the filming in case anything goes wrong with the camera. And usually the crew is up the opposite time to what you are. So you're having to wake up at 11 o'clock at night and work through till 11 in the morning with them. And I'd come off 2 weeks of being on this opposite time, and I'd gone to visit a friend for a couple of days before coming back to Houston. And nobody knew that I was there. I was just recovering. And my cell phone rang on the second day I was there at 7 in the morning. And I was kind of really cranky about this. And I said, who is calling me on this number? Snatched the phone up off the kitchen table, kind of barked into it. Hi, this is Jim Voss. I'm calling you from the space station. I'm not kidding. And they had, on that second increment, that crew had little Cisco, they're not really telephones. They're a little hookup that plugs in, that reaches, goes via satellite. It's on their laptop computers. And they were having, at the time of their lives, dialing their friends. Normally you can't speak directly to the crews, as you know. You have to go through the NASA hierarchy of only the CAPCOM, another astronaut, can speak directly to the shuttle crews. But in this case, they were allowed to call their families and friends, and I had no idea this call was coming. So Jim had just called to chat about what he'd been shooting on orbit. And one of the things he said at the end of that was that we also shot you 6 seconds of aliens. That's it. So those 6 seconds of aliens are in the film. That's all I'll tell you.
Okay, so what's next for you then?
We have a couple of projects that we're just beginning to develop now. This project itself was about 4.5 years from beginning to end, and so we haven't had a breather, nor much time to really develop other projects, so we're just beginning to work on those now. One, of course, is another space film, and another one is possibly about a hurricane.
Well, thank you, Tony, for joining us on the Space Show.
It's been a great pleasure, and I hope that everybody will come out and see the Space Station 3D. It's at the Melbourne Theatre opening on the 13th of June, and I guarantee it'll take you to Space Station.
Thank you.